sing, gave us the gift of life. This series of sermons that we embarked on to start the year centered around the notion that God in Jesus has given us a gift. The gift of health, wellness, and being whole. The gift to have life and live it to its fullest. And so a couple of weeks ago, Reverend Lindsay Geist was here, and she shared with us some perspective on what that looks like from a biblical basis to live that out for ourselves, to care for our souls, because indeed, that is an act of worship, in a way that we receive that gift of wellness from God. Last week, Pastor Stacy took it a step further to explore what that looks like for us to be well and whole in relationship with one another. If you haven't heard any of those, or if you've missed any of those sermons so far this year, you can go to the church's website or to our podcast and listen to them. I encourage you to do so, because I think there's something good in there for all of us. And this morning, we're going to take it another step further to consider what it means to be healthy, whole, and well as a community, collectively. And to do so, we'll look to the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, specifically for a description of what that means, to be well, together, to receive that gift of wellness from Jesus. But I want to note that the book of Hebrews itself would have been particularly revolutionary at its time. It doesn't strike us the same way today as Gentiles and modern-day American Christians, because really the thrust of the book of Hebrews, and we're not even sure who wrote it, but we know it was written to the Jewish people, the thrust of the book of Hebrews is to take everything they knew and held sacred about their faith and how they practiced it, and to point out that in all of those things, they're brought to their culmination, to their fulfillment in Jesus. And so the writer of Hebrews takes up the topic of the temple, the place where the Holy of Holies was, where God dwelled among them, and talks about Jesus as the temple, brings in the veil that was between the rest of the temple and the Holy of Holies that no one could go through except for the high priest, and talks about Jesus as the veil that is opened up so that the path is made clear between us and God. The writer of Hebrews talks about the holy high priest and says the new high priest is Jesus. He even talks about the sacrifice that was made for the atonement of sin and says the sacrifice that was made once for all was Jesus. So over and over again through the book of Hebrews, the writer is lifting up for the people and for us that in all of it, everything they've known about God and themselves and the worship of God and their relationship with God is brought to completion, fullness in Jesus. Then we get on to chapter 10 of Hebrews, and the writer says, okay, then knowing these things, understanding these things, let us put them into practice in our lives. And in some very specific ways in chapter 10, the writer says, God even said, I will put my law, I will put my will on their hearts, in their minds, so that I will be with them and they will be with me day in and day out wherever they go. I will forget their sin and their lawlessness. I will remember it no more. There will no longer be a need for a sacrifice to atone for sin. God said they will be free, completely free to live and to love God and to love each other freely, recklessly. So the writer says, then let us approach God, God's throne, with confidence. And then the writer says a couple of more things that open this up, expand it beyond just ourselves to us as a community, to people who are living the faith together. And that's what I want to read for us this morning from Hebrews chapter 10. I'm going to read verses 23 through 25, and they're going to be on the screen, so you can follow along as I read them aloud. It says this, Let's hold on to the confession of our hope without wavering, because the one who made the promises is reliable. And let us consider each other carefully for the purpose of sparking love and good deeds. Don't stop meeting together with other believers, which some people have gotten into the habit of doing. Instead, encourage each other, especially as you see the day drawing near. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. And see, as the writer of Hebrews begins to bring these teachings and this understanding about Jesus to life for the hearers and the readers, particularly in a communal aspect, he starts with saying, let's hold on to our hope without wavering, because the one who made the promises is reliable. He's saying, hold on and don't let go. Not because of the strength of your grip, but because of the strength and power of the one to which we hold. Let us hold on, because he's reliable. And we'll come back to that in just a little bit. But then he goes on to say, let us consider each other. Let us pay attention to each other. Let us think about each other. And that's more than just one-on-one. Really, when the writer says, let us consider each other, what he's talking about is all the each others around us. The encouragement here is to let us consider all of each other. In the sense that living well and healthy and whole as a community then is to consider to be considerate of all of the each others around us as we live out this faith together. And he doesn't just say consider each other. He doubles down and says, let us consider each other carefully. That's more than just a passing thought or pleasantries. But really, it's an invitation to care for each other and be considerate of each other, and not just one-to-one, but again, of all of the each others. To consider each other carefully, put another way, in the original language it was written, would be to look fully upon each other, or to look intently upon each other. It would mean to see each other, to really look at all the each others with whom you're living out this faith. I know that may start to sound a little creepy to stare at each other, but really look at each other. But it's not that creepy. In fact, if you will, I would like to just do a little exercise in practicing this, okay? And having named that it might be creepy, just go with me. As a way to practice this, carefully considering and looking upon all the each others that we're gathered with this morning. So here's what I'd like to ask you to do. Here's the practice that could be creepy, but it won't be because we're all doing it, okay? Is I'm going to ask you at 3-second clips, 1, 2, 3, to look at somebody in the room. 1, 2, 3, and look at somebody else. 1, 2, 3, and look at somebody else. And we're going to do it 10 times. That'll only take 30 seconds. I know, but just go with me. So, and the odds of them looking at you while you're looking at them, those are slim, right? Because we're looking all around the room at people. They don't have to be the people right next to you, but they can be, but it's going to have to get to 10. So, ready? If you'll just find somebody in the room and just give them a look. 1, 2, 3. Find somebody else. 1, 2, 3. Find somebody else. 1, two, three. Find somebody else. One, two, three. That's four. Find somebody else. One, two, three. That's five. Find somebody else. One, two, three. That's six. One, two, three. That's seven. One, two, three. That's eight. One, two, three. That's nine. One, two, three. That's 10. Did anybody actually look at 10 different people? It was really fun watching y'all do that. Or if I may not do that, some of you. Was that awkward? You did it? Thank you. Does that feel awkward for anybody? Is that weird? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It depends on you, maybe, and your personality. I don't, there's something about looking upon one another, to see one another. Even just for 3 seconds seems like it's long enough to start to have something opened up for you about that individual. That's a person. That's a child of God who has a past and a present and a future, who has hopes and dreams as well as fears and failures. Somebody who wants to be known and loved by God and known and loved by others. Have a place to belong, a community to call their own. And I think this starts to open up for us what the writer is talking about when we carefully consider all the each others that are gathered around us. When we see them, when we see all the each others that we are with, and see them to understand all the each others, to understand each other, our differences in our backgrounds and our perspectives, our thinking, our places in life. There's something about when we are willing to do that together. When we're willing to, with care, consider one another, to understand each other. Because I got to ask, I don't know how much understanding there is going on in the world today. I don't know how much effort and energy and investment is being put into truly seeing one another with care, to understand each other. Think about it on a worldwide level. How much of what we see and hear and read is a demonstration of our energy and our effort being put toward understanding each other? Let me draw the circle a little tighter and just think about our nation. How much of what we're hearing is effort toward carefully considering all the each others around us, particularly in the midst of the things that make us different from each other and unique? I'll draw the circle tighter. How much of our effort and energy, investment of our time, are we spending in the church to consider carefully all the each others around us, to understand each other, so that there might be a place for all of us, for everyone in God's kingdom and in God's church, even right here in Chamblee? So that we all might be a part of the community that is well and healthy and whole together. This is my opinion, okay? I'm just going to admit it as that. I'm convinced that in 2020, the church is to be the place of healing and belonging in the world. That when Jesus said, I came that you could have life and have it to the fullest, that you could be healed and made whole and well right where you are. And he gave that promise and that invitation to you, to me, and to everyone everywhere, to the extent that he would give his life so that we could know the fullness of it. The church is to be the place of healing and health now. And the church is to be the place of belonging now, where anyone and everyone can be loved and have a home and know that they belong. And I don't just mean fit in, I mean belong. I was listening to an interview with Brené Brown. She's an author and a speaker, and I appreciated the way she put it. She said, fitting in is when you want to be a part of something. Belonging is when others want you. Oh, that the church would be the place of belonging, where we consider one another, each other, all the each others, carefully, with care, with love. The writer of the Hebrews says, in order to spark one another on to love and good deeds, that it would be a place where we all belong, a community where we all can be encouraged and sparked on to love and good deeds. And we see that in all sorts of ways. I'll tell you a way that blew my mind recently, to think about how a community can spark someone on in love, was I watched a movie called The Farewell. I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it, starring Awkwafina. She's a modern-day Chinese-American actor and comedian, but I saw an interview with her, and that's what made me want to watch the movie. But the premise of the movie is that it's customary in China, the way the movie presents itself, that it's customary in China when someone receives a diagnosis that's terminal, they don't tell that individual. They tell their family. And so this movie, starring Awkwafina, explores what it looks like when her grandmother is diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer but isn't told. Rather, her sister's told, who notifies the family. And then the ones who live outside of China, fly back under the guise of a wedding to surround the grandmother and be there with her through that season of her life. So they don't tell her. They all know it. And in the interview, Awkwafina was asked, why do you think this is a practice? And she said, well, the reason for it is so that those of us who surround that person can shoulder that burden for them. And they don't have to carry it themselves. We carry it for them. Now, I don't know about you, maybe you've heard this before, but if you're hearing it for the first time I heard it, it blew my mind. That made no sense to me, that someone wouldn't be told of a terminal diagnosis that they have. Of course you tell us. That's me. That's my diagnosis. Tell it to me, by golly. I want to know it. But what the movie does a fabulous job of exploring is how that community surrounds and loves and cares for that person and carries that burden for them on their behalf. And there's a poignant spot in the movie where the character played by Awkwafina, who'd been raised in America, and so this is all foreign to her as a way to live, even her character in the movie, she's struggling because she wants to have the conversation with her grandmother. And so there's a place in the movie where she's talking with her dad and her uncle, and they're trying to help her understand the reason and acknowledging the cultural difference. And the uncle says to Awkwafina's character, in the West, you think one's life belongs to one's self. That's the difference between the East and the West. In the East, a person's life is part of a whole, a family, a community. Now, while that practice still I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around living that way. Boy, I hear it, and I get it, that my life and your life, although we go through life thinking this is my life, it belongs to me, it's mine, including my diagnosis. And their culture, the understanding is my life is not my own. I'm a part of a community. I'm part of something bigger. And I think that's what the writer of Hebrews is getting at. That we consider with care one another. So that we can spur one another on in love and to good deeds. I mean, I just look around this church and see examples of that. There's some folks in this church, and you probably wouldn't know this, but there's some folks in this church who discovered that there was a woman who was living in her car, out of her car in our parking lot. And so they went out of their way to try to help make sure that she could get indoors first and have a warm, safe place to sleep at night, and then to help her get her own place so that she could try to get her life back together and her feet under her. They came alongside her to help make that happen. In fact, are still doing that right now. Carefully considering one another. Sparking one another on to love and good deeds. We have a committee or a team here at the church we call the missions team. That it's their responsibility to sort of look about how do we be in mission, how do we serve and meet the needs of the people outside of our church, foreign, domestic, and all parts in between. And I've talked with some of them, and they're exploring ways that our church could participate in a program called Family Promise, which is it's essentially a network of churches in a community that rally together to support families who are homeless, to give them a place to stay by using church facilities, to give them food and care and support and, you know, helping with the kids, whatever the case may be. I mean, it's a well-oiled machine, a program that has a director, and I've been a part of it in other communities. And so we've got folks at our church here who are looking into how could Chambly Methodist be a part of something like that in this community. Carefully considering all the each others around us with love and to good deeds. And so the writer says, then don't neglect meeting together. Now, granted, you can read that and hear that, and maybe you have before and thought that means, well, you need to come to church on Sunday. And I mean, there's something to be said for that, for gathering together to sing our praises and lift up our prayers, to hear the word and to share in the communion meal, for sure. But there's so much more to it that don't neglect meeting together. Another way to understand that is don't abandon each other. Don't abandon this community, this beloved community where everyone belongs, where there's a place for everybody, a place of healing and health and wholeness. Don't abandon it. And of course, for the writer of Hebrews to say that way back then, it was a different time than it is today. They didn't have the church buffet that we have now, where you can just ride down the street and go to this church or that church, take your pick, denomination or size or, you know, whatever. They just had the church. I mean, it was the church. And you were a part of the church. Like all those people that you just turned around and looked at and creepily, tried not to creepily stare at. They just had each other. And it was, don't abandon this. We're at a season in the life of the United Methodist Church where there's some tension within our church, particularly as it relates to the place and the role of LGBTQ persons with marriage and ordination, and it's a struggle. I was listening to our bishop talk about this the other day, and she named something that goes beyond that, but it's just being a parent now in this particular context. Those among us who say, you know what, I may think one way or you may think another, and in fact, there's a whole spectrum of people's thoughts and opinions and biblical interpretation even there. But we can be the church together in the midst of that. Even though we may view things differently and experience things differently, we can be the church. We can be this beloved community, considering carefully all the each others among us, sparking each other to love and good deeds. And she named, she said, there are going to be some folks, particularly if you want to take that spectrum, some folks on one end or the other, they're going to say, it has to be my way. It has to be this way. This is the way I understand it. This is the way I see it. And it has to be like this. And if it can't be like this, then I can't be a part of it. And they're going to want to separate. And that's painful. Our bishop is calling us that if that is the case, and wherever that's the case, that we love one another in the midst of that. That we have mutual respect and encouragement for each other, that we would continue to love Jesus, serve him, and serve our neighbors wherever we find ourselves. You know, I went to visit one of our own, Bill Robinson. I don't know if you know Bill and Betty Robinson, the longtime members of this church, and Bill fell recently, and so he was in the hospital, and I went to visit him. They usually sit back there, you know, they're not with us this morning, but I just went to see how Bill was doing and check in on Bill and Betty, but they brought up this subject, and they had seen the email that I'd sent out to our congregation about it. I don't know if you saw that email. Maybe you breezed right by it because it came from me. Or you might be like me. Mine was in my junk folder. I didn't even realize it, and I wrote the darn thing, and it was in my junk folder. So maybe if you're on our email distribution list, you might want to go and check and see if the emails are going there. If you're not, I encourage you to sign up. Or if you'd like to get that specific email that I sent out with some good resources and things to read for the denomination, let me know or let us know in the church office, and I'll send it to you. But Bill and Betty had read it, and so they brought it up to me. And I just want to share with you Bill's words, and I think they transcend even any particular topic or subject. Bill said, I go to church to worship God. I don't go to church to worship a preacher. Gay or straight, married or single, doesn't matter to me. I go to church to worship God. And he said, I don't go to church to worship the people in the pews beside me. Gay or straight, married or single, I don't go to church to worship them. I go to church to worship God. It was one of those moments where I was like, okay, I thought I was coming here to give you something, not the other way around. And then, you know, I had a conversation also recently with Dottie Smith. Hey, Dottie, and she gave me permission to quote her. You know, with all the conferencing that's going on in our denomination and the votes that have been had and ones that will be had at the general conference in May, Dottie, I've come to know you this way. She said, I don't care how the vote goes, this is my church.